You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
The biggest environmental fight in Western Canada is arguably the fight against the Enbridge and Kinder Morgan pipelines, in opposition to the resulting tanker traffic in West Coast waters. A National Energy Board joint review panel on these proposals have been met with strong opposition at town after town and city after city. Last month, National Resources Minister Joe Oliver and Transport Minister Denis Lebelle called a press conference to announce a more rigorous inspections, enhanced aerial monitoring of tankers, and the creation of a new tanker safety expert panel. The Wilderness Committee says the program is completely inadequate. Owen Madden is climate change campaigner at the Wilderness Committee, and he's here with me in our studio. Hi, Owen.
Good morning, Lorraine.
Now, Minister Owen is calling this tanker safety program world class. You call it an insult. So what changes did they actually announce?
Well, I did go along to the announcement itself, and it was a bit like being invited over for dinner and just being handed a bowl of peanuts and a glass of water, and that's it. There was very, very little announced that was of any power or weight to us. There was actually about 8 different measures. Some mentioned things like navigation facilities, and some mentioned a new sort of an oversight facility like flying planes over the actual tanker route. But it was an insult because nothing new really was presented. I mean, British Columbians know the risks involved. To suggest that a couple of flights over an oil spill will help us out is insulting us. There's a lot more information we need. A lot stronger measures are required to be able to reduce the risk.
Now, the program includes what they're calling a tanker safety expert panel. What's their proposal there?
That's all we have. I mean, we don't know anything below that. We know at the same time, so over the last 12 months or so, the Kitsilano Coast Guard was closed down. The Marine Traffic Control Room in Vancouver also was closed down. So there's a little bit of spin here. We're just wondering about the timing. Why is it happening now when an Enbridge hearing is going ahead on whether these pipelines should happen whatsoever? It seems a bit more like they're seeing the polling and they're seeing how many people are opposed to these proposals. And it's an opportunistic approach by them to try and turn the tables a little bit on the debate really here.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit more because, as you say, the timing comes in. It comes right in the middle of the joint review panel's investigation of public response to the proposals for both of those pipelines and the whole Northern Gateway project. Do you think that this is a good faith way to respond to those concerns?
It actually has seemed to have gotten worse. That was on the 18th of March that we had these announcements, and I was reading the business section of the Vancouver Sun just on Thursday, and there was announcements about how pipelines are going to be great for trade in Asia. So we had a trade minister turn up in Vancouver at what was called the Asia-Pacific Trade Get-Together or Summit. And he spoke directly to representatives of Asian nations about how these pipelines are going to help us trade with those nations. This isn't a done deal. We don't have a clear indication from the National Energy Board whether or not these pipelines, or this one pipeline, the Enbridge pipeline, is in our best interests. And then there was, of course, Bill C-38 last year, which means that any further hearing on issues like the Kinder Morgan pipeline, for instance, are totally different now. So we will never have another hearing like the Enbridge hearing. It's going to be a completely different process. So all of that, given all of that, there is bad faith here, yeah.
How much new tanker traffic would these pipelines create?
The figures for Enbridge, I believe, around 250 sailing down through our western coastline. For Kinder Morgan, the numbers keep increasing because the volume of oil they reckon they're going to bring through Vancouver increases. At the moment, it's about 900,000 barrels, which equates to about 288 tankers a year. So just to give you a perspective on that, the figures from, say, 2011, there was about 80 tankers leaving Vancouver, 80% full, a size of around Aframax or Panamax, just a type of ship. I don't want to sort of confuse your listeners with too many tanker terms, but the idea now is to go way, way bigger. The Suezmax-sized tankers would be due in here. to give you a perspective on that, you've got the Exxon Valdez spill, which put about 750,000 barrels of oil into our ocean, covered 11,000 kilometers of ocean. That's the sort of size that they're talking about. That would take a dredging of the area around this, the Second Nares Bridge here in Vancouver as well, all of which hasn't been resolved yet, all of which the ministers and trade ministers are presenting as a done deal, which is an insult to people here who have to suffer the consequences of something like Exxon Valdez happening again.
What evidence do we have about the effectiveness of disaster responses to major oil spills and the ability to contain damage and to repair the ecosystem?
Well, I mean, our benchmark is always the Exxon Valdez because it spilled in an area which is quite similar to our coastline here. It's absolutely environmentally specific, which means you look at the coastline itself. The maximum that you can take back out of the seas if there's a spill in a sort of a flat region like the Gulf of Mexico is about 25%. The amount they got from Exxon Valdez was about 10% of the total unloaded. There's still 26,000 barrels of oil on the coastline in Alaska to this day, 24 years later. The damage to the natural reserves that were there, the orcopod, which is gone forever, can never be recuperated. The simple matter is an oil spill never gets cleaned up.
Now, we've heard about the differences between crude oil, and which I believe primarily floats, and tar sands bitumen. In an ocean spill, how does that differ from a crude spill?
Well, firstly, the assumption that crude will always float—it's that's not true. Large parts of it disperse. Some of it does not float. Some of it does float. We know that the dilbit, which would bitumen, which would be in the tankers leaving Vancouver and Kitimat, will not float. So they will definitely sink, and that's been confirmed by tests recently. That was a debate that rang out through the Enbridge hearings for a long time, and we had industry spin that issue and say, well, no, this stuff will not sink. That seems to have been accepted by everybody now, so that's a good step for us. So it will not react the same way. Normal dispersants, for instance, that would get rid of crude oil do not work on bitumen. We know that from sort of our experience here in Burnaby in 2007 with the spill that happened here. So it does not react the same way. We have the poor unfortunate folks of Mayflower now in Arkansas dealing with the issue. It's a different sort of spill.
Yeah, I've been made aware of possibly three spills in the last wills coming in the last week coming from pipelines. You mentioned the one in Arkansas. If we're looking at the coast and oil traveling in tankers, what could a spill look like here?
Oh, it's a function of how much you've got on board. So again, we go back to the Exxon Valdez at 750,000 barrels spilt. It's enormous sweeps of our coastline. For instance, once you get out past that sort of the sea lanes here, you get big changes in tide, 12 over a 3-day period. So that really affects our ability to be able to clean this stuff up. The response organization itself is called the Western Canada Spill Response Corporation. It's a long title for what was called Bird Clean. They're tasked to clean up 73,000 barrels by law. So if you factor in how big these spills can be, our laws say that this corporation is supposed to take out 73,000. You can make 10% of that as what they could actually take out. Beyond that, it's the Coast Guard's duty. So beyond sort of Juan de Fuca Islands, we've never had the Coast Guard involved in a major oil spill here in Canada. So it would be a first-time effort. So you would expect a first-time effort to be a learning experience. We don't want it to go there before we actually learn our lessons. We don't want the spill. We want to stop this before it happens.
And the way that we've been talking so far is that we have you know, a coastline, and we have ocean, and we have this massive kind of pollutant in there, but we haven't been talking about the actual ecosystem there too, the complexity of the ecosystem and the number of things that would be effective. What does that look like?
Well, when we looked at the Exxon Valdez, we lost a whole pod of orcas. And we know how precious orcas are to Vancouver here. They're on our hockey team. What happened with the orcas, in fact, in the Exxon Valdez incident was that all the sexually mature adults were killed. So that actually meant the pod never recovered, period. So you actually, you run the risk. There's a southern resident pod of orcas right here in this region. You run the risk of never seeing them in this area again. And there's a lot of industry, tourism industry, that's based around whale spotting and that kind of thing. So that's the first hit you could imagine. Exxon Valdez, 250,000 birds, thousands of sea otters, so on and so on. It's a whole ecosystem basically is taken out for a whole generation.
And so those are the, you know, probably some of the largest animals, mammals that are being affected. But we are talking about an ecosystem all the way down to, you know, microscopic elements that are important to the whole ecosystem there.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, with that orca pod, for instance, that we lost in Alaska, there was another 11 that were lost the following year because they didn't have any herring to feed on. So there's sort of a chain reaction. Even the microorganisms that are in the waters, they're affected by dispersants, for instance, the chemicals that they put on this water to try and disperse the crude, or in this case, bitumen. The knock-on effect, it's impossible to know. They're still trying to figure all that out in the Gulf of Mexico. You can just write off an ecosystem for a generation is pretty much the best way to put it.
Now, the federal government, as you mentioned, and as we all know, that has been shutting down Coast Guard stations and marine communication centers along the coast. What sort of impact could that have on tanker safety or disaster response?
Well, there's human error is always the cause of things like this. They mentioned issues like putting new navigation systems on ships. In the Exxon Valdez incident, the captain was drunk in bed. There was a third mate sailing the ship. He or she decided to not turn on the radar. If he or she had have tried to, the fact of the matter was that it was broken, and it had been broke for about 12 months. These are the sort of mistakes, human error, that cause spills. When your marine traffic center is no longer in Vancouver, I believe it may be in Victoria, you can't avoid things like this happening. It's human nature.
Hmm. Now, I understand there was a missing boat at the photo op.
Yeah. Well, when I was there, I noticed some very, very sort of small minor boats parked beside the ministers as they made their presentation and couldn't figure out what they were for. It was only the next day that we found out that the major vessel that's designated in this region to actually, you know, respond to oil spills had stranded itself on a sandbank and did arrive, but 11 hours late. So in the case of an oil spill, that's a lot of damage before you get to respond. It gives people an indication of the difficulties trying to get even that 10% of oil out of the water, period.
What is your sense of the breadth and strength of the movement against tar sands development and the construction of pipelines across BC?
I think people are realizing that there's a better future for us here in BC, that we're underselling ourselves. You look at the graduates that come out of SFU, UBC, to think that they're resigned to just taking resources out of the ground and selling it for the cheapest price they can get on any market is again, an insult to these young graduates. And we could be world leaders in a much better way of doing energy. There is a huge growth in wind energy that's happening in BC, which brings hope to me. Nations have led the way that are not this province. We've got Germany, who are really showing us how it's done and generating lots of jobs to boot. So there's often a sort of a false dichotomy created by industry spin and by government spin right now, which is very unfortunate, which sort of says, well, you know, it's the environmental way or it's the job creation way. We know that BC can generate a real strong green economy and can be a world leader on that front. And that's what I feel like we're generating here. So when people say no to the tar sands and they say no to oil pipelines, it's a proxy issue. It's basically saying yes to a better future, one that you don't have to work a job that you feel is detrimental to your kid's future.
Now, there's been a lot of vocal support for protecting BC against tar sands, against tankers. What are some ways that people can get involved in this fight?
Well, shameless plug, join the Wilderness Committee. That's the organization that I'm from, and check out our website, wildernesscommittee.org. There are so many ways to contact relevant people. Contact your local MP, contact your MLA. It's not just the federal government, it's the provincial government that are part of this discussion. Just get involved. You will find ways to do so. And make yourself aware of the sorts of changes that this federal government are making to our laws. Bill C-38 is something that everybody should sit down and learn. There's great resources out there to let you know the key points. A local law firm here called Eco Justice did a very, very good document on that. Just Google it, go and learn. And I think it's time people started to stand up and fight against this. I don't want you I don't want your listeners to feel like that's sort of some sort of anarchistic reaction. I'm saying fight with letter writing, fight in numbers, walk the streets. But it's time that we started to sort of change the direction that this country's moving in. And if you would like to get involved a little bit more, on Saturday, April 20th, we're having a parade in the name of Earth Day, which is a very important time for everyone that's interested in these issues to get together. So join us. It's at 11 a.m. on 8th and Commercial for a parade.
Okay. Sounds awesome. Thank you very much for joining me and talking about this very important issue.
No problem, Lorraine.
I've been speaking with Owen Madden. He's climate change campaigner at the Wilderness Committee. And as he says, you can find their website at wildernesscommittee.org. You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
This podcast was produced by the Red Eye Collective in Vancouver, BC. If you live in the Vancouver area and are interested in creating alternative radio with us, we'd love to hear from you. Contact us at redeye@coopradio.org.